Welcome to the Wibbly Wobbly Timey Wimey Podcast.
I'm Talia Franks, media critic, fanfic enthusiast, and I exist outside the whole of creation.
And I'm Lucia Kelly, expert and applied analysis, and I worked in shops. What's wrong with that?
And we're here today to talk about Army of Ghosts and Doomsday, the 12th and 13th episodes of Series 2 of Doctor Who. Oh, that's the last time I'm going to get to say that.
I know, but just think it's also the last time, pretty much, that we're going to have to talk about Rose. Silver lining.
Yeah.
Army of Ghosts and Doomsday aired on the 1st and 8th of July 2006, respectively. They were written by Russell T. Davies and directed by Graham Harper.
Reminder that time isn't a straight line. It can twist into any shape, and as such, this is a fully spoiled podcast. We might bring things in from later in the show, the comics, the books, the audio dramas, or even fan theories and articles.
With that out of the way, travel between parallel worlds is impossible. So let's get in the TARDIS.
I really hate how the Doctor was constantly saying in this episode, "That's impossible. You can't have that." What the hell? The Doctor is so paternalistic in this episode. It is so frustrating.
The way that both the Doctor and Pete are framed specifically as like the men that the Tyler women are meant to be with, and also are framed as knowing what's best for them. I hate it so much. It's the worst.
It's so frustrating how the Doctor is making so many decisions for Rose, but also, so he makes the decision for Rose that he sends her to the parallel universe, but he also brings two clamps,
right?
So he knows that she's gonna be there, or he expects her to be there. He knows that she's gonna come back. So what was even the point?
I think the point was that for the story to work, you need to have two clamps. So he needed to bring them.
But so for me, the way I read it was that he brought the two clamps expecting Rose to stay, but he sent Rose away so that Jackie would leave.
Oh, that's brutal. That's brutal. But par for the course, right? We can't have Jackie in an episode without completely bashing her and making fun of her. Just wall-to-wall Jackie bashing.
But I don't fully understand it. Just put the clamps next to the levers. You did not need to put them that far away. And also, Pete showing up at the last second? Like, how did he know to show up just then? Like, why did I just...
It's such a deus ex machina.
It's so...
I'm not mad at it, but...
Also, the Doctor showing up in her dream?
Listen, I'm so curious to see how this episode of our podcast is going to be received, because I know that Doomsday is held up as this like romantic ideal, right? We haven't been shy about how we feel about Rose and Rose 10. So anyone who's still here agrees with this, I would think, possibly, or you've got an incredibly strong constitution, but like,
yeah, or you've just dropped in for just this episode and you're about to be hit with a doozy because we are not fans.
No, I hate how romance and love, how love just in all its forms is framed in this episode. It's so possessive, and it's so like, we talk about consent and we talk about agency as well. The way that nobody in this episode trusts Rose to have her own agency and to make her own decisions. and is constantly judging her from all sides.
It's disgusting.
It's disgusting. You know I'm a huge Jackie fan. The monologue that she has where she's talking about how, like, there'll be this woman 50 years in the future, but you won't be Rose Tyler? Like,
what the fuck?
What the fuck? If my mother said that to me, I wouldn't even know how to react. That is so utterly hurtful and destructive to say.
That's... I can't even with that. Why would you say something like that? Why?
And then, what really upsets me is that literally everything else about Alternate Universe Pete, I adore. He's such a good character. I love how he keeps the Doctor accountable. I love how clear he is about, you know, the rules he has about interacting with different universes in terms of, like, she's not my daughter, she's not my wife. He's so level-headed and knows exactly what he wants and gets it. He's such a strong character in the literal construction of his character. Like, the character is strong. And then there's this awful possessive element. And it reminded me, like, I want to root for Pete and Jackie so bad. But we have literally never seen any version of them that is functional and healthy.
We really aren't.
They have never been functional or healthy in any of their iterations, in any of their, like, never, not once. I want it for them. I want them to be happy so bad, but you know it's not true.
The only way I can rationalize it is that this Pete from the alternate universe and this Jackie from, like, the main universe were incompatible with their Pete and Jackie, but are compatible with each other.
But, like, once you have that sweet moment with... Also, fuck the Doctor and Nikki for side-eyeing Jackie when she's like, there was never anyone else. Like, yeah, Jackie's had a full and fruitful sex life after Pete. That doesn't mean she was in love with any of her partners or that she didn't consider Pete her true love. Both can exist. Stop slut-shaming Jackie.
I know, right? Did they really expect that she would be celibate for 20 years?
Like, sorry I didn't wear black and, like, isolate myself from the rest of society because my husband died. Like, oh my God. Anyway. But, like, after they have that sweet little reunion moment, or, like, meeting moment, I guess, like, hell of a meet cute, as soon as that's over, they go right back to being so dysfunctional. Like, it's never gonna work. I'm so upset.
Okay, but then she immediately gets pregnant and they have another kid. Although, actually, okay, this leads me to another moment I wanted to talk about. On the beach, when Ten asks if Rose is pregnant, the way that he asks makes me wonder if he's wondering if it's his baby. I don't know. The way he asks, something about it makes me wonder.
We'd know if they'd banged. We'd know. They would make that. It's a kids' show, it's a kids' show, but, like, they'd make it textual. We'd know.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Okay.
Are you kidding me? They would absolutely have made Ten Rose officially canon. They would absolutely have done that.
I don't know.
All the fanfics in the world won't change the fact that Ten and Rose are explicitly written in the text as, like, too bad it never happened. Like, we loved each other, but it never worked out. It's explicitly written as a tragic will they, won't they, they never did couple.
Okay, you can have sex never having said I love you. I'm just saying.
In the real world, yes. Not with this kind of story.
Okay.
If they had had sex Rose would 100% be like, so I'm your wife now. That's 100% how it would have gone.
Okay.
It was never going to be his baby. Rose. The drama. This is the story of how I died. No, it isn't. You never died.
Also, who was she talking to?
Right? You set up this framing device and there's no frame. There's no audience. Like, there's us, the audience, but there's, who is she talking to? Is this just Rose's head? Is this just what it's been the whole time? And this is the first time that we've seen, is Rose just constantly narrating to herself?
This is reminding me of season 6 and how it always started with Amy's narration.
Oh God.
And it's also making me think about how so many people in future seasons are like, oh, I hate that Moffat did this, or like, oh, I hate that Chibnall did this. And it's like, these are seeds planted by RTD. Even how later the whole thing with the Cybermen and what happens with Bill and Danny and Black people and Cybermen and all that horrible traumatic stuff that I hate is actually seeded by RTD in Torchwood with Yanto's girlfriend. Like, it all starts with RTD. All this problematic stuff is seeded in RTD's run. We can talk about all this stuff that we dislike in Moffat, all this stuff that we dislike in Chibnall, but a lot of it was seeded by RTD. That's part of why I'm worried about him coming back, honestly.
Yeah. So let's talk about Torchwood. Okay. Yvonne.
Imperial vibes. Because it's not even subtext, it's text. British Empire, Imperial tons.
Yeah, yeah. It was started by Queen Victoria. So, like, that's consistent, at least. They clearly haven't updated the manifesto. Like, they've still got the same document from that Queen Victoria penned herself. It's like, this is the main objective of this organization. British Empire, and also fuck the Doctor. If the Doc ever turns up, kick his ass hard.
And I love Jackie's reactions to it. I love how Jackie grounds the entire scene, like Camille Kaduri, her reactions, all her facial expressions, everything she does in that scene grounds it completely. And I would just love to see Jackie as a companion.
Do you know what I reckon it is? They realized too late that Jackie would have been a phenomenal companion, so they wrote Donna. Donna's just Jackie in a different skin.
Honestly, Donna and Jackie really are so similar. And I'm so excited for when we get to The Runaway Bride and we can talk about Donna because she's so great.
And also, we get to talk about Freema and Martha because guess who turned up?
Yeah, Martha's cousin, Adeola, is here. I love how they, like, explain things away like this.
I know, right? It's like, oh, we actually want her back.
Yeah, we want her back, so she had a cousin. And also this thing, I know people talk about how, like, oh, people don't actually look like their cousins that much. No, my mom looks so similar to her cousins who are twins that one time my mom was, like, walking around town with her cousins who were visiting when she was, like, in, I don't know, like, some, like, high school, whatever. And one of her teachers ran into her and was like, oh, I didn't know you were a triplet.
Yeah, no, like, also, that's the thing you're choosing to focus on? That's the thing you're choosing to nitpick in the whole of Doctor Who? Martha's cousin? Priorities, man. Yeah, the in-work chat.
Oh my God.
It's so painfully 2005, 2006. Also, you want to see something great? Like, RTD, come on. A little bit of effort, please.
No.
Also, there's no way that Matt didn't think that was going to turn into a threesome. He's like, you want to see something great? Wing, 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 wing. Do you think the Cybermen were revealed too early?
Well, the Cybermen were revealed in the episode preview.
But not everyone watches the preview. In the actual episode itself.
Actually, what I really appreciated going back to the preview is that the preview revealed the Cybermen. It revealed the I'm gonna die arc. It didn't reveal that Mickey and Pete were gonna come back. It didn't reveal anything about the Daleks. The Daleks would have been a complete surprise to anyone who was only seeing the preview for the first time. What I liked about it is that the preview gave the impression that it was telling you everything that was going to happen, when really it left so much out.
Mm. And I do appreciate the fact that they actually keep that consistent. The new Cybermen design is the parallel universe Cybermen, like always. That is their origin, which makes it so cool on a story level and on a history of the whole show level when they bring back the in-universe Cybermen.
Yeah. One thing I do also like about the Cybermen and the Daleks is that whole little interaction. Oh my God, the Daleks and the Cybermen and their little petty argument where they're like...
It's so funny.
It's so hilarious. And they're like, this is not war. This is pest control. Like, we would defeat 5 million Cybermen with one Dalek.
Daleks have no concept of elegance. That is obvious. It's all so good.
Yeah. Okay, so this is another example of where I adore this version of Rose. This is yet another Rose, but when she's talking to the Daleks and she's like, yeah, I killed your emperor. This is going to be my last words. I killed him. It was me. Like, just so you know, I'm that bitch. If this is going to be my last words, I want you to know I'm the one who killed your homeboy.
Yeah.
This is the Rose that I love. And this is the Rose that I feel like is the reason why people love Rose.
Yeah.
I'm that bitch. This is the Rose that you want to see in the world.
Be the Rose you want to see in the world.
And then it just turns right around because they're not giving her the autonomy she deserves. They're not giving her the space to be that great person who has that potential. She just ends up shrinking back in on herself as soon as the doctor is back.
And this is what I think I said this on Rose on our very first episode. It is so frustrating that you have this like kernel, this tiny element that so rarely gets a voice. Of like the real Rose, but they make her relationship to the doctor so overwhelmingly present and turn her into this whiny, clingy teenager. And that becomes her overwhelming character trait, right? Is that she can't think of herself as separate from the doctor. Like, that is what Jackie should be bringing up in the TARDIS, which I think is what she's aiming at when she's talking about how, like, you even look like him. The problem is that Rose is in a toxic relationship and she doesn't know it or want to acknowledge it.
Yeah.
That's the issue. But it turns into this victim-blaming mess where... everyone around her recognizes, like even the doctor recognizes that they shouldn't be together. But it's framed as, we're doing this for your own good, you silly little girl. But also, paradoxically, in tangent with that, this is the greatest love story ever told. Pick a side.
Can we? Okay. This love story. Can we just talk about this moment on the beach? It's so disgusting to me that when she chokes out that I love you, his response is quite right too.
Just say it back, you bastard. What the
fuck? Just first of all, just say it back. Two of all, the arrogance of saying, of course you love me. Quite right that you love me. Like that, that's just, it's so disgusting. I hate it so much.
And like the fact that we're not even, like, it can't even be that this is the end, because we're going to go two beautiful seasons with Martha and Donna, and then we're going to be right back on that same beach at Journey's End, and the whole mess that is the 10-2 ending. They don't even have the audacity to fix it.
Okay, but speaking of kisses, can we talk about the fact that Jackie just smooches the doctor multiple times when he shows up?
There are so many kisses. 10 smooches Mickey on the forehead. Also, 10 and Mickey seem to have, like, completely mended their relationship. They're on good terms for some reason.
No, but Jackie just kisses the doctor ferociously multiple times.
For why? What happened to the Jackie that slapped the man?
What's with the kissing?
What's with the kissing?
And what's with Rose needing to do laundry?
There is no way in the entirety of this universe that the TARDIS does not have a laundry.
The TARDIS does have laundry, okay? This is established in the comics with 10 and his companion Gabby. They have a laundry machine. I know, because there's like a mud monster that infects the laundry machine. It's kind of a hilarious comic. But there is a laundry machine on the TARDIS, okay? The TARDIS has a laundry machine. She's clearly only asking her mom to do her laundry as an excuse to come home. But again, she's not even using her cell phone. Like Jackie says, I don't know why you bother with that phone. You never use it. Is Jackie paying for this phone that Rose never uses?
Is Jackie paying the wild phone bill that having a universal time-hopping phone? I sure hope when the doctor did the little doodad that he also made that thing free.
Yeah, and also when Jackie does laundry, she has to go to a laundromat. So she's paying to do laundry. That the TARDIS has a laundry machine that's free.
Jackie should be bringing her laundry to the TARDIS.
Exactly.
That's what should be happening.
Mm-hmm.
The disrespect.
Of course, then she might end up on Mars, so.
Oh my gosh. The way we were robbed of having Jackie as a companion for 2 or 3 episodes. I'd want it so badly.
Also, I feel like there are so many instances where the companions have such interesting extended family that I would love to see on the TARDIS. I would love to see Jackie on the TARDIS. I would love to see Wilf on the TARDIS. I would love to see, we got a little bit of Rory's dad on the TARDIS. I would love to see more of him on the TARDIS. I would love to see Grace, Ryan's nan. What happened to her, I cannot abide. But I would have loved to have her on the TARDIS. Like, honestly, can we just swap her out for Graham?
Right. We all know who should have been on the TARDIS.
We all know who should have been on the TARDIS. Like, it should have been Grace. It should have been. Like, Graham even says at her funeral, it should be her here instead of me. And it's like, damn right it should be her instead of you. I will never be over Grace O'Brien. I will never be over Grace O'Brien dying. Never.
So Pete says that they ran into trouble with trying to rid their world of Cybermen because people started committees, basically, and were like, the Cybermen are people too. The degree of sentience is unknown, and you can't just eradicate these people without investigating that. Which, when Pete says it, sounds like, well, yeah, of course, they're Cybermen. We've established this. Once they're gone, they're gone. But then Yvonne remembers. Yvonne is still her. She's sentient. She remembers. She has a goal. She goes against Cybermen command.
Yeah, and if you think about on that alternate universe, when they disable the emotional inhibitor, that other Cybermen remember that it was the night before her wedding.
Right? So
they do have sentience. They do remember who they are. It's not that simple. I feel like there is a world where they could potentially alter the Cybermen so that they had their emotions without pain. I know that the Doctor could do it. I know that the Doctor could do it.
Also, like, you don't have to look like a Cyberman as well. This opens up a whole new world of, like, okay, this absolutely horrific thing has been done to you, but it's a shell, it's external armor. We can transfer that to a different shape, to a different thing. One of the big things when we're first introduced to the Cybermen is that it's their appearance that drives them mad. Like, the fact that they've been turned into these Cybermen is part of the horror of it. But it literally doesn't have to be like that. Like, there are possibilities here.
Yeah, even what happens to Bill, as much as I hate it, she remembers and retains who she is. And eventually her consciousness is transferred into that weird, oily alien body, whatever. But the point is, she's able to have her consciousness transferred out of the Cyberman body and become a different shape. It's possible for people to recover from becoming Cybermen. It's possible for their consciousness to be transferred. They don't have to be exterminated or killed or whatever. Someone like the Doctor, who has that capability, like, they had all the Cybermen contained into these factories. I feel like they absolutely could contain the Cybermen and transfer their consciousness. It doesn't have to be this way.
It doesn't have to be this way. I would love to see that explored, maybe not in an actual episode, but maybe in a comic or maybe in a novel. The idea of a recovered Cyberman settlement, like a collection of people who were Cybermen and are now okay.
Yeah. Is there anything else you want to talk about before we move on to favorite moments?
Oh, yes. The psychic paper works on technology? Question mark? Question mark? Question mark?
Yes, I noticed that. Psychic paper.
What?
You can use it as a little tap card, but what? It doesn't always work on people, but it works on technology. Like, how?
Right?
How do they have psychic training so that the psychic paper doesn't work on them, but they haven't put a blocker so the psychic paper doesn't work on their tap cards?
It makes no sense.
Actually, okay, before we move on, I do have another point. Rajesh Singh, what happens to him is so egregious, but also, that is one of the most common names they could have possibly given him. Singh is the second most common last name in India.
Right. The fact that, like, it's just such a consistent issue at this point. I was going to bring this up before. The fact that whatever his name is, Gavin, Adeola's side piece. The fact that Gavin goes in first, but it's Adeola that gets focused on, it's again centralizing the pain of people of color for no damn reason other than unexamined racism and bias. It's just, I hate it. Also, he's so sweet. He's like, Samuel, what are you doing? I want to see the whole workplace comedy that is Mickey infiltrating Torchwood and then having to work under Raj. There's at least a 5-part series in that. I want it. Also, again, this is just repeating points, but like, Mickey and Rose, man. Mickey and Rose. They never figure it out. They never sort it out. They never do it. He calls her babe. He has this little line about, like, I love how you talk with me. Stop it. All right. Favorite and least favorite moments. Well, I know my favorite moment. So. Least favorite moment is when the doctor and Pete put the ring, the little doovers over Jackie and Rose, and then Pete pulls them away from Jackie, and she's just screaming and weeping, and all of that.
Oh my God, that was honestly the worst. I couldn't bear to look at the screen during that. Also, honestly, these whole two episodes were so difficult to watch that it took me multiple hours because I kept pausing and having to take breaks because these whole two episodes were just so stressful. Just so stressful. Like, I know that Doomsday is like held up as such a great episode, but I just hate it. I just hate this episode with a visceral intensity. I think I had to pause it like 10 times because I just was so frustrated, so stressed. It was a slog. It was a slog to get through. But yeah, that is also definitely my least favorite moment.
What was your favorite moment though?
When Rose and Ten are separated because they deserve it. I'm so glad that Rose is finally gone. My favorite moment is when Donna shows up because it's
right. Like, that's fine, Donna. I'm so excited.
So excited. I'm so excited that we're finally escaping Rose. We're out of the Rose hellhole. Honestly, Pete should never have caught her. She should have just gone into the void. Then we would be rid of her for good. I'm kidding. Mostly.
Yeah, no. We've got Donna, and then we've got Martha, and then we've got Donna again. And then Rose comes back very briefly, but we don't need to worry about that.
I hate that Donna's season is so polluted with Rose. Like, Rose just sprinkles all throughout Donna's season. She just keeps popping up like a bad penny. And I'm like, couldn't Donna just have a season by herself? I mean, I like Martha's episodes where she pops up as a guest star. I find Martha coming back great. In the Centauran Stratagem, in The Doctor's Daughter, like those episodes where Martha is like a companion alongside Donna, I love it because I think Martha and Donna have great chemistry as companions. Martha and Donna as a team with 10, all three of them traveling together would have been chef's kiss. If Donna had stayed on for all of season 3 alongside Martha, I wouldn't have been mad about it.
The fact that Catherine Tate only has one season physically pains me. The fact that Donna only got one season is a crime.
On the one hand, I love that Martha had a season on her own because I loved having a Black companion just by themselves without having a white person to like anchor them. Obviously, there was the Doctor. Because every season after Martha's, when we had a Black companion, there was also a white companion. Like, Bill had Nardole. Ryan had Graham. And Yaz, but Yaz is fantastic. I'll never complain about Yaz. But Martha was the last time we had just a Black companion. But at the same time, Martha and Donna have such great chemistry. I wasn't mad about Martha coming in on Donna's season. Who's the hero in the Atom?
You know I want to give the hero to Jackie. I just need to figure out a way to rationalize it.
You had all before this episode to prepare.
I know.
You didn't have to wait until we were already recording. I want to give the Atom to the Doctor because he's paternalistic and annoying.
Yeah, no, the Atom is definitely the Doctor. It's so... Oh, there is something I wanted to talk about before we did all this bit.
Okay.
The Doctor as war veteran. Finally! Like, I feel like this season of 10, I feel like I've waited for this side of 10 to reveal himself. The way that David Tennant plays tired is so compelling. I adore it. The way that in these two episodes in particular, you feel the weight of every single, not only every year that the Doctor has been alive, but like every second, the full weight, like the reaction of seeing the Daleks and realizing that the Daleks are here, the way that he multiple times throughout these two episodes doubles down on his no weapons policy, the way that he talks about, like the line where he's talking about being on the front lines and the delivery of how he says, and one day I might even come to terms with that. This is the Doctor that I've been waiting for. It's so good. This is what Eccleston brought and Tennant is holding up. I'm so happy we finally get to see it.
Yeah, it is definitely something that I am eager to see. And I am glad to see that we're finally getting. I'm going to give you time to think about Jackie's the hero while I go. You have a little bit more time to deliberate. I'll be right back. All right, you've had your time. What's your verdict?
All right. Here's what I got. Without Jackie, there would be no Rose. And Rose, despite it all, does ensure that the gate stays open long enough to get rid of all the Cybermen and Daleks. And she would not have that tenacity and bullshit behavior if Jackie hadn't raised her. So in fact, it was Jackie's victory all along.
Yeah, but Rose is the one who did it. So you're saying that Rose is the hero, not Jackie.
Has Rose ever been the hero? Ever?
I think Rose might have gotten the hero in Rose, actually.
She might also have gotten it in The Unquiet Dead, possibly. No, Gwen did, of course.
Yeah, Gwen got the hero in The Unquiet Dead.
You know what? I'm okay with her getting it at the beginning and the end. I did find it interesting, the parallels between Rose, like the episode one Rose, and Doomsday were funny to me. The most obvious one is when the Doctor is speaking to her in her dreams, whatever. But she like bolts out of bed in the exact same way that she did in the pilot, which is funny to me. And also delightful, they had that same elevator shot, the same shot of the lift when they all go up in the lift. Also, oh my gosh, we haven't even talked about Jake, beloved.
I love Jake.
Hang on, how can I make Jake the hero?
Jake is the one who pointed out that they should go into the lift, and if they hadn't taken the lift, it would have taken them a lot longer to get upstairs.
There it is. Also, he never violates anyone's consent or assumes to know better than anyone else, which is another point in his favor.
And Jake came in right at the right time to stop all the Cybermen from killing the Doctor. Yeah, so Jake is the hero.
Jake is the hero.
Jake is the one who was, like, really leading the resistance on the ground.
Sure was.
So Jake is the hero. We got
there. Jake is the hero. We got there. We got there in the end.
Got there in the end. Okay, now grading.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. Okay, this is the part where people are going to get mad at us. Okay, production.
I'm trying so hard not to judge the CGI.
Yeah, the CGI was bad. It was 2006.
It was also 2006. The part that really, that makes me giggle every time is at the end when all the Cybermen just lift up together. It's just delightful.
The part that makes me cringe is when Rose is falling into the void. And that,
right? It just takes that little bit too long.
And like the effect of her, like, and it's kind of blurry, and she's, no, I can't do it. I know it was 2006, but I feel like there was a better way to do that effect.
Also, this might be more writing than production, but the fact that, like, the way that they convey this is happening everywhere is a stock image of the Taj Mahal, and then that deeply offensive little Japanese news segment.
Yeah, no, I can't do that. No.
Like, that whole section is just, give it a 3 or a 4.
3.
Writing, similarly, 3?
No, I want to give it a 2 because come on. All right. Lack of consent.
Lack of consent, completely overriding Rose, riding the garbage trash carousel wheel of fire that is the Tan Rose relationship as romantic.
No, I can't deal with 2. 2.
Now,
acting.
Now, don't hate me. I really don't like Billy's acting in that final scene.
I also don't like it. I don't hate you. I agree.
It's so much. And it's also the fact that, the Doctor is like, Tennant is not matching Piper's energy.
He's really not.
Like, and it just sort of highlights how it's not done well.
He's like a cardboard box. And she's like,
well, he's doing like understated tragedy and she's doing soap opera, which if they matched, both would be fine.
No, like, that's what I mean. I'm not saying like his acting is bad. I don't mean cardboard box and that his acting is bad. If he's a cardboard box, she's applesauce. They don't mix.
Yeah.
I'm not saying like in the sense of bad. I'm saying they're very different textures.
Yeah.
I don't know why I thought cardboard box and applesauce, but I'm saying like they really don't match.
Yeah. But I also feel bad because like basically the end of the line is that I want to give the acting a 4. But the only other time we've given the acting a 4 was also because of Billy doing crying acting, and I feel bad about it.
But I think it's a nice bookend. We give acting a 4. Season 2. We're giving acting a 4 at the end of our season 2. It's a nice bookend. Okay, science.
Science. The psychic paper with the tech. Just what? But everything else kind of works.
No, I don't like the clamp in the fact that they didn't get pulled into the void. Because I'm sorry, there's no way that they, like, the clamps were strong enough, but there's no way that they had the arm strength.
Right, have they been doing, like, pull-ups in the, is there secret footage?
The fact that Rose was strong enough to push against the force of the entire void sucking her in to push that lever up, there's no way. There's no way. So I want to give the science a 3 or maybe even a 2. It's bad. It's bad science.
Bad science.
What do you think?
I think a 3, but only because it's only those two glaring issues. I like the void stuff. I like the using the glasses. I think it's funny. I loved the way that they explained the metaphor of using the glass.
Also, the glasses come back in one of my favorite Doctor Who books, which is Doctor Who Legends of Camelot with the 10th Doctor and Donna. And they get sucked into this universe where Arthurian legends are real. And basically, the glasses let the Doctor and Donna see through the illusion. Because it's basically people in this universe are being forced to, like, act out the Arthurian legends. Their lives are being co-opted to play out the legends. Like, people are cast into the roles of Arthur, Guinevere, and, like, Lancelot. They all have to act them out over and over again as a game that's being played by these two figures that are playing against each other, like cosmic beings. Like, Morgana and Arthur are forced by this other cosmic being named Merlin into playing this game. And, like, they're basically asleep, and their dream is that they're in this world playing out the game. And the Doctor and Donna basically go into this universe, and they can see through the illusion that Merlin has cast using the glasses.
All right.
Rewatchability.
Rewatchability. What?
I want to give it a 0. I hate these episodes. I never rewatched them. It was painful. I only rewatched them because you made me. Let's give it a 0.5.
Oof. 12.5 out of 25.
That is a 50%, which is solidly an F.
You failed.
So that leaves us with final grade for production, 4.25, 85%, which is a B. Writing, 3, 60%. That is a F. Acting, 4.9, 98%. That is an A plus. Science, 2.9. 58%, that is an F. Rewatchability, 3.15, 63%, that is a D minus. All right. Total grade for the season, 73%. Season 2 gets a C. Join us next time for our season 2 wrap-up episode, where we get to talk about season as a whole, all that fun stuff.
I think we're going to be pretty kind. I think we're going to be pretty reasonable, and it's definitely going to be an episode.
An episode, yeah. And this is compared to season 1, got a C plus, 78%. All right. Until next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Wibbly Wobbly Timey Wimey podcast.
We hope you enjoyed this adventure with us through space and time.
You can find us elsewhere on the internet, on Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram at Wibbly Pod. Follow us for more Wibbly Wobbly content.
You can find out more information about us and our content on wibblywobblytummywarmy.net and full transcripts for episodes at wibblywobblytummywarmy.net/transcripts.
If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can also send us an email at wibblywobblytummywarmypod@gmail.com.
Please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and other platforms as it helps other people find us and our content.
If you'd like to support us, you can send us a donation at paypal.me/wibblypod.
Special thanks to our editor, Dee, who has been a vital member of the Wibbly Wobbly team.
That's all for now. Catch you in the time vortex.